Kieran Hallett, live from Australia. How the devil are you?
Very good, mate. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, and I can tell your wife's been away for a month because you're looking in quite good shape. You obviously got way loads more time on your hand than you did when the family were over.
It's been a bit of running going on, a bit of weights, but a bit more free time, being a bit more productive without the family, but missing them a lot.
Oh, he had to say that. It's a bit like Lanny. So Lanny's obviously over at Leinster and like flies over and spends days over. So no, I imagine you've been pretty productive in the last few weeks.
It's a lot easier, but it's tough without the support there as well, especially when you have a tough day or a hard day or a loss or whatever, and you come back and the flat's empty. It's not quite the same.
Yeah, I get that. It's always nice to have the kids run up to you and
The
everything
distraction.
disappears at that point. Nice. Cool. Do you want to? Well, let you. You can start wherever you want. But like, how did you end up sat in a room in Australia?
I'll start with probably the day job. So my normal job is, well, the official title is Elite Player Development Officer for the IRFU and Leinster Rugby, which is a bit long. Essentially, I'm a senior academy transition coach for Leinster, so embedded alongside the senior coaches there. All our players train with the seniors full time, and we kind of myself as a back specialist and a guy, a forwards coach who works alongside me, we kind of help the guys transition into that senior space and support their kind of final stages of their development and try and help them earn senior contracts within that environment. And all academy staff are centrally contracted to the union, so we end up picking up some underage international stuff off the back of it as well. So I've done Ireland 18s, Ireland 19s, hopefully maybe Ireland 20s in the near future. Off the back of that was looking at how I transition, or what the next stage of my career is, moving from the academy space into a senior role. And one of the things was that I probably need a bit more experience to do that at Leinster. And this opportunity to come down to Australia and do a season with the Rebels, working in Super Rugby with their first team, came up through the union, through Peter Smith and David Nusafora. Gave me a call one day and said, "Do you fancy doing 8 months in Melbourne?" Here we are, just finished off a Super Rugby season and about to head home tomorrow.
Nice. And Peter Smith, the king of Rotherham, as I know him, a top man. And yeah, and I guess, and before that, a journeyman player, would you describe yourself as, or a good player, or a like.
Championship battler is probably the best way to jumped around the championship a fair bit. Bedford, Plymouth, Pirates, Nottingham, the championship clubs I played at. I had 1 year where I was at Ulster as well. That was okay playing wise. I had a great time living in Belfast. Belfast, great city to live in. Playing wise, it's quite a good plan. But championship battler is probably the best word to describe my career.
Nice. And since we're going to talk about coaching, well, which coach got the best out of you?
Probably I worked with Nigel Carolan with Ireland under 21s, as it was back in the day. He's now, I think he's head coach at Glasgow now. Very good. Yeah, he easily got the best out
Mate, you went straight to the point, like you didn't even have to think about it.
of me.
I was thinking I was gonna have to say the building is on fire, you can only save one, but you only saved one. Why?
No, there's like
What stuff was helpful? What stuff do you wish coaches had known about you as a player?
I think he was probably the first coach I worked with that actually would sit down and have proper conversations around, okay, what are you seeing? What do you think? Previous to that, it was, here's the plays, run these, do this, do that. He was the first one that kind of challenged, what I was doing, what I was thinking tactically, and asked my opinion on stuff as well. So that's probably why he sticks with me. And look, I worked with some good coaches, and a few that perhaps didn't see eye to eye with as well, but it's part of life, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if learning is building on prior knowledge, then it's pretty helpful to ask what you're seeing and what you're thinking. It would be helpful. And then coached a bit. So you coached at Plymouth, then a bit at Exeter, and then obviously come over to Ireland. And I guess it's like interesting that obviously, Aidan's been over there. He's been at Ulster. He's done the Ireland Women's Sevens. He's now with Munster. Like, I do think they give you a reasonable, if you want it, menu of experiences to help you get better.
Yeah, look, I can't speak highly enough of them as an organisation. They've been great to me, and they really invest heavily in the young coaches that they have to try and make them better. And similar to what we do with the players, like, they don't have the same player pool size as England. To a certain extent, we have what we have, and we have to, we have to focus on making those players the best that we can be, because otherwise we don't produce any. It's not like you can, just chalk one off and the next cab steps up. And I guess coaching is they take the same kind of philosophy and attitude towards that. So yeah, big investment in the people they have, which, hopefully return with some loyalty and, wanting to stay around a bit.
All I'm thinking is RIP Kevin Bowring, who obviously did all of this stuff at the RFU and was unceremoniously got rid of by Dean Ryan. Did I just say that? Yeah, it would be helpful, eh? And how's it been? Like, what's been the best bit of your trip so far?
I think, like most, guys my age, you grew up watching Super Rugby on a Saturday morning. And then all of a sudden, you stood in, you stood at the Chiefs ground in Hamilton, or, we've gone to Fiji twice, to play the Drua, which was just the maddest experience I've ever been involved in. Analysing players like Bowden Barrett, Richie Mwanga, it's cool. It's pretty cool stuff.
Why mind? What was so crazy like about Suva?
So it was the first home Super Rugby game they played in Suva. So I think this is the third year they've been in the tournament. But obviously the previous 2 years were COVID, so they were playing home games in Australia or New Zealand or somewhere else. I don't think they had any games in Fiji. And their first home game was in Lautoka, where they beat the Crusaders. I think that was 2 or 3 weeks before we went there, and that kind of set alarm bells off. but it might not be the easiest trip. They're a different prospect when they're at home. And just the heat getting off the plane, we arrived on the Thursday, so it's a 4-day trip for us when we play away from home. So we arrived on the Thursday, the heat hits you, the lads, it's hot in Australia, but it's different. Humidity, was incredible. And so we prepare well, you do the best you can, and then we arrived at the game in Suva, and there's people lining the streets on the way in, thousands and thousands of Fijians just going crazy. I think they sold 15,000 tickets to the game, standing room only. It was absolutely rammed, and just from a neutral point of view, the best festival atmosphere I've ever seen at a club game of rugby. And we just walked into it and immediately got punched in the face. I think they scored 4 tries in the first 15 minutes and created 25 offloads, just completely unplayable. Yeah. And we managed to kind of claw our way back into it, and then they pulled away again at the end. But when they're on, they're a different level.
Yeah, I guess it's cool, isn't it? Like, you already spoke about that, analysing different players, but it's as coaches, we want to get better, we probably need some fresh information. And now you are travelling, playing against teams that have different styles, coaching it against different coaches, analysing players that probably only the Ireland internationals are the ones that are normally analysing. You're just having this whole, I imagine your brain hurts.
yeah, a bit. And it's different. It's a different style of rugby. The tactical side of it is different. They focus on different things.
What's different? Because again, lots of my guesses, although I haven't watched as much Super Rugby as I'd like, that lots of the stuff we talk about here, building phases, winning the middle of the pitch, the kicking battle, staying patient in the kicking battle, that type of stuff would be less important over there.
Becoming more important. The kind of stereotypical view is that, don't really care about defence, kicking game's not as important. But it's we would talk about the kicking battle a lot, and very conscious of the stats around, the Chiefs have finished top of the league this year and they kick the ball more than anyone else. Crusaders have always kicked the ball more. Brumbies you know, Brumbies and Crusaders are probably the two teams that play most like a Northern Hemisphere side, and they're the two teams that are regularly, you know, hitting the top four. So there's a kind of, there's an awareness of it, but I don't know if there's quite the understanding of the detail that has to go into it to make it
I knew
work.
you can say the D word. I knew you
Detail,
I
yeah.
appreciate
Sorry,
you
yeah,
saying it.
your favorite word. Yeah, I think it's more of an understanding, and then you probably look at it from a player's angle, and you know, there definitely wouldn't be the emphasis on that coming through the pathways. So, you know, you're then trying to teach, you know, professionals who are setting habits of a way of a certain of changing how they play, which, you know, is quite difficult to do. It's a lot easier if, you know, the kids coming through have a bit more of an awareness of it.
Nice. And then a couple of things. One is, when I chatted to Marcus the other day, he said the reason the teams that kick the most win the most is because you receive kickoff and then you kick next. So if you score more tries, you kick more. So which is true. Detail. Yeah. I watch lots of teams. It's interesting. I watch lots. So I think Joel Abbs coached a really good team in Oynac, and I watch other teams that are trying to play more of a kick game. Same in France in the Pro D2, really. Like there's lots of different ways of playing, but they don't understand like what to look for, why to kick in certain places, what outcomes they're looking for, where are the weaknesses. They're just not like the tactical awareness, I guess, isn't. My experience of New Zealand in January was I had loads of kids that were super skillful, like on my days, moved so well, physical, like powerful, but have very little tactical understanding of the game. And I guess that's probably one of the reasons why Ireland are the number one team in the world, because they've got a reasonable combination of both. They probably haven't quite got the athletes that you've got over there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the detail word, like it can mean different things. Like for me, detail is not this is what we do and this is the only way we do it. Detail is a shared framework of an understanding that this is the kind of the broader outline, but giving the player the freedom to make the decision based on, you know, previously agreed cues and space and you know, that kind of stuff. You know, it doesn't just mean, right, you're in this slot, so you run this line.
However, it often does. But I agree with your version of the word detail, by the way. Obviously, it's about what stuff you're going to look for. It's about seeing similar pictures and it helping decision-making.
Yeah.
And so is that something you've found that you spend a lot of time, like, actually you're going, these players have got reasonable skill set, but actually we're having to do much more stuff around setting them good problems tactically, probably doing a bit of video stuff, probably doing a bit of freeze on the pitch and growing their understanding?
Yeah, we definitely spent a lot of time on the tactical stuff. But I think there's been a shift in Australian coaching. This is from what the other coaches have said to me, is that they've kind of gone away from teaching the fundamentals of the game. Like everything's, you know, game-based approach, and you know, the whole kind of, you know, modern coaching aspect of, you know, learning through games and everything. But they've kind of gone away from a little bit of repetition stuff. And I think for me, like, I think you said it on, I listened to the podcast you did last week, and you mentioned like skills as times tables and like trying to do advanced
times tables.
Oh no, you two times table. Yeah. So they've gone away from, you know, the times table stuff and too far on the algebra side.
I sense that often though they've taught the times tables in a way that isn't like committed to memory. So
yeah.
My time in Australia as well in January, I was like, they needed to understand how to put their skills into context. So they probably need a more games-based approach, but it might be with an overloaded attack. It might be actually that we slow down. It might be that we think about the size of the area. Again, for me, it would be levels. I met lots of players that were like, the one that probably transfers the most, if I'm honest, is presenting the ball on the ground. Like everyone in Australia and New Zealand was like awesome at like going really long and putting the ball on the floor. But I think as they've done like thousands of reps of it, but it might not be the best times table to learn. And you could, of course, lift the ball. But I obviously, it's not one or the other. I understand like time on task and deliberate practice is super important.
Yeah. I think, like, as a coach, that like the magic of coaching is not limiting anything in your coaching toolbox, and knowing, you know, the right tool to pick at the right time for the right player. And sometimes that might be a bit of, you know, closed repetition stuff, but that doesn't make up 99% of your overall diet. But it might be the thing that that player needs at that moment.
Yeah, and have you found that? Because again, like you're working with quite a big coaching team at Leinster, although Lanny would do a lot of it, I guess. And then you've come to a new coaching team. Has that been a good experience, like working with other coaches who might add to your menu of options?
Definitely. And you know, the challenge of taking stuff that I've learned and can see work in one environment, and not just copy and pasting it, because that never works, but like taking the understanding of it and then adapting it to a different environment with different players, I think that's been a really good experience for me. And yeah, Stu would do a lot of that skills-based stuff at Leinster, and would talk a lot about John Wooden and you know, repetition and muscle memory, and you know, being able to then, if it's explained in the context, and you know, and players understand why they're doing it, and then makes it easier to then be able to execute under pressure if you don't have to think, you know, consciously about it just becomes autonomous.
Is there something that you could go, actually, we took this from Leinster and we brought this to the Rebels and it was helpful? And is there something that was at Leinster where you went, I thought this would work with the Rebels, but like the context was so different that it was a waste of my time? Because those are the choices you're making all the time, aren't they, as coaches?
They are. I think the biggest change we try to face, so my role with the Rebels, I didn't actually say what I was doing. So I'm skills and assistant attack coach down here, and there's a new attack coach came in at the same time I did from last year, and I watched a few of the games before I came down, and just watching how they were attacking, not from a system point of view, but just the kind of trying to figure out, okay, what are their fundamentals without speaking to anyone. And everything was very lateral. It was sit deep. It wasn't really engaging. It wasn't dictating to the defense at all. It was all shift the ball early, try and take an edge, sit deep again, play out the back deep, play out the back deep, and try and take the other edge. And that's kind of, you know, I'm sure loads of people have watched how Leinster are attacking. It's kind of the opposite of that. It's play flat at the gain line. It's run square, inside shoulders, dictate to the defender where you're running and make him step in. Or if he doesn't, you straight through. So a lot of the work I did initially was around, you know, catch, just simple catch pass stuff, but actually staying square where you're doing it. Stuff you teach, you know, young kids to do. But they've just gone so far away from that with the previous attack coach. Yeah, and it's not that there's a right or wrong way to do it. It's just that's fundamentally how I believe the best teams are attacking at the moment. And yeah, dictating to, I know you're a fan of dictating to the defense, right? Well, I am running in this hole. If you don't move out of your system to defend me, then I'm going to go straight through. And then what are the options? What's the decision making around that if the defender does or doesn't, you know, step in?
Yeah, even just think about the winger in isolation. Like wingers have got to understand when to stand flat and when to stand deep. Like, if we're in the opposition 22, I think there's a high chance they'd be relatively flat to stretch the defence and to maybe get cross kicks. Now, if in other parts of the pitch or with different players, it might be different. But players have got to understand like when and why for both of those things, don't they?
Yeah, 100%.
And so if they have one option. If we just played flat all the time, or we just played deep all the time, it would be. So I guess I actually watched Fletch when he was coaching, and I won't mention the names, but he would use a couple of fly halves as an example. So if Marcus was playing 10, he would almost have to shout out, I'm playing deep. I'm Kieran Hallett. I'm Kieran Hallett. I'm playing flat. I'm Johnny Sexton. So actually starting to go, this is the time when. This is the time when. Just to check his thinking, which I thought was a pretty cool way of coaching it, and. Not that surprising.
Really nice.
And any stuff that you went, actually, this worked at Leinster, but like this environment, it wasn't the right thing for it.
Yeah, some of our probably some of our kicking game stuff and kind of backfield stuff. Like, we put a huge amount of learning and emphasis on that in Leinster. And I don't know whether it was just Super Rugby being different or players, it was just too much information going on at the time. But yeah, just didn't quite work. And there's a slightly different defensive system here. so it made it a bit trickier. But like just you know, in layman's terms, the you know, rebels were quite keen to use a pendulum, whereas the Leinster we don't. We just we pillar it. We kind of a half pendulum, but we try not to close if we can. So yeah, that didn't quite transfer over. And obviously, the backfield stuff would be something I'd be you know be doing a fair bit of back home with our academy lads, getting them ready to go into you know, URC games. And so yeah, that's probably the one thing that didn't quite try to transfer.
And was that part of the role, as you just described there, same over at the Rebels, was to go like young players, get them like oven ready for Super Rugby. And what did you notice? It was about like both ways, like about the young players there versus the young players in Leinster, who I imagine have had very different experiences up until that point.
Yeah, hugely different. And that kind of final step. So Rugby Australia's got a big problem at the moment, and it's that the young players aren't playing enough games. You know, I did a quick conversations. We had a few guys in the junior Wallaby squad from here, just totaling up the number of competitive games they were going to have this year versus their equivalent in the pathway in Leinster. And the Leinster players were playing almost double the amount of competitive games. Now, obviously, that you know needs managing from a player welfare point of view, but I think it was yeah, I think they were playing maybe 10 or 11 competitive games here, and it was you know mid-20s back home. So from that experience gathering point of view, they're far behind. But there's no proper tournament that sits beneath Super Rugby. You know, the young players are struggling to get exposure, so they essentially sign a contract. You know, coming out of school, go straight from a school environment straight into Super Rugby squad, which is you know way too big a jump. You know, even if you were playing a really high standard like Shoot Shield, you know, which is the highest you know level club competition in Australia, it's still not really preparing guys for Super Rugby. And you know, the club rugby scene in Victoria, you know, is not as strong as the Shoot Shield. So it's a big issue for them, and they're aware of it. And I think my understanding is they're trying some stuff next year to try and fill that gap, but it's a big issue.
They'll be sending all the players back to Ireland, won't they?
Yeah, potentially. But that's where like the AIL, you know, I know, you know, sometimes it gets a bad rap, and you know, some of the other provinces maybe don't send their players to it as much as we do, but you know, it's a huge part of what we're doing. You know, it's a really important stage in those guys' careers, because you know, the transition from you know, playing underage stuff, you could be a rock star at underage, but like you need to go and you know have some tough times going and playing away in Limerick, you know, against 30-year-old men who've been doing it for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, you mentioned we were just chatting offline there about Carter Gordon and like his kind of experience, and whether you know, even he's maybe like 4 or 5 years out of school now, but you therefore have some challenge, you know, if you do eventually come through, you've probably had some pretty challenging experiences to get to the start line, quite frankly.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, Carter's been our first choice 10 this year, and he's had a great season. He's in the mix with the Wallabies. Hopefully he goes well, you know, this summer and gets his first cap. But you know, he was kind of thrust into the starting job, I think, last year with the Rebels and struggled, really struggled. I think he you know he'll openly admit that. And you know, I think he played the first two or three games and made some mistakes as young tens do, and so he's gone through that kind of resilience period where he's had to bat off some things and fight hard and make his way through. And luckily, he's come out the other side, and you know he's a much better player for it. But you know, for every Carter that manages to do it, how many young players don't, and you know then fall out of the system, or you know they don't recover, and mentally they can't recover, and you know they end up not playing professional rugby anymore.
How do the two compare from a psychology point of view?
Which two? Sorry, the two pathways.
Ireland and yeah.
I just think when you're playing more games, you're learning more. You're learning on the job. You know, whereas if you're always training and you only get to play 10 or so games, you know, you things like your even basic things like your match day routine and you know your warm up and just how you mentally prepare for you know games week to week, and you know they're not getting that exposure, you know, and haven't seen anything around like mental skills development here. But the number of players within the pathway that I'd have interacted with here would have been a lot smaller. I know it's something that we're trying to bring in more, and it's kind of the buzz thing at the moment, isn't it? And you know, is mental skills. We all appreciate that that's probably the next step in professional rugby, but no one's really quite sure how to do it or what it looks like. But it's something that we're looking at bringing in more within Leinster.
And coach development will come a little bit further down the line. Although in Ireland, to be fair, you're doing coach development pretty well.
Yeah.
What about the players? So, like you mentioned, like analysing Beauden Barrett. Like, what have you found out about players over there?
They're incredibly skillful. Give them a bit of open field or one-on-one stuff. Yeah, from a backs point of view, in particular, you know, they're up there with anything that we've got back home, if not a bit better. But you know, they're kind of, like you said, the tactical understanding is a little bit off. But like, yeah, there's some, look, there's talent here. There's a lot of talent here. And I think, obviously Eddie Jones coming in as the Wallabies coach, as he's been down with us a few times, and we've got a lot of good young players. We've not potentially had the results this year. But there's the bones of a core group of young guys who are in a really good spot, and they're talented. And if he can kind of get into them over the next couple of years, that Australia will be back up the top.
And he's going to make or break it, isn't he? Really, he's got the keys to influence. And I guess post World Cup, he'll probably have more of a chance to influence. He won't be sticking his fingers in just yet, but he'll be like thinking about what are the needs so that the national team can do well.
Yeah, the thing that did surprise me with the Kiwi sides, and we ran the Hurricanes very close, we ran the Crusaders very close, the Blues tore us apart a little bit, but we still created a high number of line breaks in those games. And you look at how Ireland have beaten the All Blacks the last few times that they've played them, and the way they've attacked, and versus the way the All Blacks attack and the way they defend. Haven't seen at super level any change in that mentality. Like, we have taken some of the principles from Leinster and applied them here, so we attack similar-ish to what Ireland have been doing, and they really struggled with it. So I was a bit surprised that they've not kind of, are not attacking a similar way. They're kind of still doing what they're doing. It's unbelievably effective off transition and turnover ball, but they don't really break you down.
They need more loops, don't they, the Kiwis?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but their attack is, look, they've got some unbelievable athletes. They're like I said, razor sharp off of counter attack, turnover ball. They'll kill you. But in terms of actually going from a set piece start point to breaking a team down, I haven't seen the evidence of that. And the breakdown here, the way the breakdown is refereed, I think actually really hurts them when they get to international level, because it's different. If they get a Northern Hemisphere ref, I think the breakdown is so differently. Here it's way more of a free-for-all. I know it's a bit of an issue everywhere and globally in the game at the moment, but some of the stuff I've seen here is just, yeah.
I wonder if World Rugby will give everyone a reminder before the World Cup, because it is we got tight. And now we're getting pretty loose again, aren't we? Some of the stuff we're seeing is quite frankly ridiculous. And the Super Rugby I've watched, I'm definitely thinking, like, that's pretty weird. I mean, they are the best team in the world on transition. But as you say, they're not that good at the moment. At like, and again, they have time together, don't they? On, like, playing chess.
Yeah.
They're good on transition because they're good at like staying square and passing and fixing defenders and exploiting overlaps and space. And when there's less space and you're a couple of phases in, you've probably got to be thinking a bit more like Ireland.
Yeah, and I think there's, like you said, there's a balance, there's a sweet spot, where you kind of are able to flip between the two. I've spoken to some of the guys down here about it, and they just said, "Oh, look, we." Really focus on, and we put a lot of attention on stuff we like doing, and we like doing counterattack, and we like doing transition. We don't like, doing three phase focus off of a line out. And I think if you actually sit down and analyze the games, you probably come to the same conclusion.
Yeah. And have the coaches been curious? Have they been like really interested in like the stuff from Leinster and Plymouth?
On the whole, yeah. Jeff Parling, probably the most curious. Shout out to Jeff Parling.
Yeah, curious guy.
Great guy, great coach. He's been very curious. But no, they've all been asking questions and asking stuff and sharing some IP. I think everyone is kind of, I mean, it sounds ridiculous. Leinster not won a trophy in 2 years, but everyone's kind of wants to know what we're doing and and how we're attacking and what's the the secret sauce. And of course, there isn't a secret sauce. It's variations on a theme.
It's contextual. And of course, I love the fact that everyone from Leinster still keeping in touch with you and reaching out and you're reporting back to them. And have both teams asked for a report? So have like Rebels gone top tips and have Leinster gone, what are you bringing back?
Yeah, so there'll be a debrief when I get home. Probably end up doing two, one with the RFU, one with Leinster. I've got my end of season review with the Rebels tomorrow. Things I've learned and things I found interesting and comparisons between the two. Basically, similar conversation that we're having now. The biggest change that for me they need to make is in their pathways, because it's the biggest hole in what they're doing at the moment. People from back home have been great. Catching up on Zoom calls with everyone once or twice a month, and they're checking that not only that we're okay and we're doing all right, but also like, can they help? Stu in particular, probing some stuff, watching some of our games, questioning what we're doing. That's been great to keep in touch with everyone as well.
And I guess French rugby are pretty good, and Ireland really, the stuff they've done in their pathway is pretty good examples of how you create a sustainable success. The top end.
Yeah. And look, we do a lot of things right and a lot of good stuff within the pathway at Leinster, from under 18s through to academy players. We're always trying to find ways that we can make it better and expose players to different things. The players that we get out of school, the school's cup and the system and the players that produces, is a massive help. The favorite line is that they're pro ready when they leave school, and of course that's not the case. It's hardly any 18-year-olds in the world that are ready to play for Leinster when they're fresh out of school. We have to do a bit with them, but the Schools Cup in particular produces a certain type of player, and we talk about tactical awareness, and because it's straight knockout rugby, it's not necessarily the rugby that we would coach or we would play, but we understand its value in terms of it creates a player that then comes to us that understands risk reward, that understands how to manage a game, so that when they come leave school and come into us, the beauty is that we then get to push the needle right at the other end and go, okay, well, how far can we take you now? And, how much can we get to play heads up? And, the ones that come through end up with this kind of, this blend, this middle ground where they understand the importance of game management in professional rugby, but also they've got this ability to play, heads up rugby and a bit of X factor.
Would you do it again if I said to you, you can go on another sabbatical?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Where would you want to go?
If I go anywhere in the world?
Anywhere in the world?
Probably Crusaders. It's probably a generic answer, but
yeah.
I was lucky enough to have a couple of conversations with Razor. More through Andrew Goodman, who's the attack coach at Leinster. He was obviously there before and he kind of linked us up before they came to town, and then bumped into him in the airport when we were playing Moana in Auckland as well. So yeah, a couple of cool chats with him, which was awesome. I think if you could go anywhere in the world, I think most people would choose either Leinster or the Crusaders. Although having said that, I'd be quite interested to see what Roger's up to at La Rochelle at the moment.
Yeah, La Rochelle. I think I've won a bit of Toulouse as well.
Yeah.
And what have the other coaches been like? Have the other coaches been exactly like that, like open to chatting and sharing? One of the think Walsh, you might have sent me like, a WhatsApp from some of the coaches that were meeting up after the game, and like sounded like generally there's a reasonable amount of sharing goes on.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably more goes on between the Kiwi teams. You get the odd conversation here or there, like for 5 minutes after the game or before the game. I haven't seen too much sharing between Kiwi teams and Aussie teams.
Aussie teams? Have Aussie teams got a WhatsApp group?
Not that I'm a part of.
You're
anyway. NFI'd for that one. I don't know. Is the honest answer? I don't think there's as much sharing between the Aussie coaches as there is between the New Zealand coaches.
I would have a WhatsApp group pretty quickly.
Yeah, that'd be good.
If you could replay it, if you could have like, there's one thing you could do differently. What's the one thing you do differently?
I think like we'd like to do more. But part of the learning for me is not only the kind of the on pitch stuff, like the technical tactical stuff. It's actually more like I'd never been an assistant coach before I came here. So learning how to influence change, how to be an assistant coach essentially. So when to really push an idea that you think is kind of fundamental to you and the team, and when actually you have to realize that that's not making the progress you want it to and step back a bit. Co-coaching and being an assistant coach was a big learning curve for me as well. I'd been head coach of every team I'd kind of worked with properly before. Obviously the academy isn't a team, but it'd be attack coach for Leinster A, head coach for Ireland 19s, Ireland 18s. So then dropping into that assistant role was good learning.
What did you learn about yourself?
Not always right, which my wife would happily tell me on a daily basis. But no, like there's some stuff that, some stuff I pushed on because I thought would be good and be beneficial, and turned out it wasn't. It actually wasn't, I think developing that kind of emotional intelligence of working within a coaching group as well. Like I feel like I'm pretty good at getting a read on players and developing those relationships, but hadn't really had to work hard to develop a coach-to-coach relationship much before. Was aware that it was a limited time as well. Like it's not like I've got 3 years here, and the season is very, very short. So, I came in, I think I was, they'd already done pre-season for a month. I got here at beginning of December. We did 3 weeks, then broke for Christmas, then another 4 weeks post Christmas, and we were into games at that point. So it's a bit of a short run up. So, trying to accelerate that relationship building, was a big learning point as well.
Well, I guess you have plenty of time together on a plane to chat. But that is tough. Even just that, like, again, coaches having different scenarios is helpful. Like, you turned up, even the fact you turned up a month into pre-season changes everything, doesn't it? You turned up at the start, you turned up a week before. I just spoke to a couple of coaches last night who were going to go, and Brentford are just starting an academy, and the two coaches are going to go and be the 18s coaches. They've got time together. They've got a complete blank canvas. So their co-coaching situation is completely different to yours.
Like a month
out, they've already put some stuff in, at which point you are like hostage negotiator. But also you've got to understand when to abort. Haven't you? You've got to go, abort. This is a terrible idea that I thought was a really good idea.
Where's this parachute?
Definitely.
And like, I think as well, so Tim Sampson, came in as the attack coach at the start of this year as well. And so, if I was coming into a situation where, he was potentially already established and had laid his kind of principles and his foundations in place, that might have been easier. But he was coming from a place where he'd signed a 3-year contract, so he was like, well, I'm in year one of that. I need to make sure that my own building blocks are in place. And there's a lot of stuff that we aligned with, but there was also a lot of stuff that we potentially didn't. And so figuring that out early on was important as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, mate, great learn.
It's like every day of my life. A different problem every day. I love, again, I think people should mandate sabbaticals, even if it's like a week going and coaching rugby league, or it's, again, on the tools, would be my other thing. Like often we'd go and observe, or we'll go and, but just get on the pitch and do some coaching. Like it would be amazing, wouldn't it, if you could go and do a week with the Crusaders, a week with La Rochelle, like, and all those things are possible.
And like observing is okay, but when you're actually thrust into it and you're like, no, I've got a role here, and I have influence over what happens, wins or losses on a weekend in Super Rugby, that's a whole different ball game. I'll tell you what was cool though. Did you see Geordie Barrett came over to Melbourne and did some training with the Storm? Did you see that?
No, go on.
Yeah, so bumped into him. He was on a rest week from the All
Are you
Blacks.
just bumping into people left, right, and centre, aren't you? Like, either there's a really low population density or you are like King Norse.
Probably a little bit of both, but no, it's a really cool setup here. So all of the kind of Rashford Reports stadia are all within the Olympic Park, which is this one area of Melbourne. So we share a training ground with the Storm. So like I've watched them train probably twice a week since I've been here, which is really cool. We then, the Melbourne Demons train on the pitch next to us. One of the AFL teams, so watching some of the stuff they do. Collingwood AFL are over the road, so you're always kind of rubbing shoulders with other sports and other people, which is pretty cool. And look, I watched a bit of NRL, but wasn't super into it back home. But then, you see guys like Harry Grant, Big Nelson, Munster, rocking around doing what they do day to day, and yeah, it's pretty cool experience. But yeah, Geordie Barrett came over on his he's meant to be on a rest week, but he came over and did like 2 or 3 days with Richmond Tigers AFL, and then did like 2 days training with the Storm. And I just thought
Wow.
that's awesome from him. Yeah, and obviously the Crusaders and the All Blacks have a link with the Storm, but for a professional player to on his enforced rest week to actually come over and do a bit of training and get in that environment, I thought was really cool. And it's probably I can see you see other lads doing that back home. I think there's huge growth there.
I'm aware that some players go over and spend a bit of time in America with like basketball coaches and things like that as well from rugby. So, yeah, I mean, how cool is that as a player?
Well, it just immediately got me thinking, like, why are we not setting up our academy backs to kind of back three in particular? Why don't we go and send them
AFL.
like 2 or 3 days with GAA,
Yeah,
just
GAA
go,
is class for that.
that sort of stuff. It'd be really easy to do, really simple to do. Upskill them, give them a new experience, change their environment, freshen things up a bit. I think it's a no-brainer, really.
Big John Afoa on the pod, when I asked him why he's so skillful, said, because I play basketball. Like, basketball's such a great game, isn't it? For like, it's a 360 game. You've got to fix defenders, it's different types of passes, scanning, anticipation, like all the
And
stuff that, forwards need when they're making decisions around catch pass at the line.
it's fast.
That's fast. Big John would have definitely been fitter than he is now.
Yeah,
He was playing Super Rugby at about 72, so
he's going well.
we shall give him that.
Yeah.
Mate, it's been awesome hearing about your trip. Loads of stuff. I've definitely got more stuff I'm going to ask you over the next few weeks. If people want to reach out or get in touch anywhere, they can find you.
I'm on Twitter at Kieran_Hallett, or if you want to drop me an email, it's kieran.hallett@leinsterrugby.ie. Happy to field any questions, or if anyone wants to touch base and ask me anything, more than happy to.
Mate, lad, safe flight home tomorrow. Enjoy. Who are you flying with? Business,
Qatar
yeah.
Airways.
Business,
No,
first
no
class.
upgrade, no business.
Lanny
Yeah,
would be business. Lanny would be business.
course he would, mate. Of
Mate,
course he would.
have a good one. Cheers, pal.
Good, mate. Catch you later.